joint ventures. When looking at financing projects, another opportunity is to undertake a joint venture. A joint venture, or JV, is when two or more parties come together to achieve a common objective. It is relevant from a financing perspective because it's a tool that can be used when individual parties cannot finance a project due to a lack of serviceability, equity, or experience, but together they can do the project. People may choose to do a JV for many reasons, so in this section we will cover JVs in much more detail, what they are, how you conduct a JV in practice, and tips on how to conduct a JV successfully. As with many things in property, if you approach a JV in an ad hoc manner, the result is likely to be less than positive. Instead, we want to detail for you the systematic way of doing a JV in order to significantly enhance your likelihood of success. Types of JVs. There are a number of types of JVs, including JV with the seller, JV with the owner, and JV with an investor. Each is outlined in more detail below. JV with a seller. Renovation example. When a property is on the market and you have identified that the property has renovation potential, you may be able to negotiate to do a JV with the seller. Commercial development example. Another option with a seller JV is where the property has development or commercial potential. In this instance, the property remains owned by the seller, and therefore the advantage is that there are no transfer costs. It is desirable if the owner has no or low debt on the property because then the equity in the property may be available to use to fund the actual deal. This becomes a no or low money down deal. JV with the owner. The next type of JV is with a property owner when the property is off market. This is a property that's not on the market, but that you have identified as having potential and you have approached the owner to do a JV with them. The strategy discussed above with the seller JV, including renovation and commercial development, applies equally with this type of JV structure. JV with investors. The third type of JV is a JV between investors. This is where two or more investors come together to do a project. Reasons why people do a JV. There are a number of reasons why people do a JV together. The first reason would be that some people have equity and serviceability, but they have no time. Alternatively, some people have equity and serviceability, but don't have the knowledge. Some people have equity, but no income, and vice versa. And some people have income, but no equity. Alternatively, some people have no income or equity, but have the knowledge and the skills. And finally, some people choose to do JVs just because by pooling their resources, they can do more deals or larger deals than they could do individually. In summary, it's because some people have equity and serviceability but no time. Some people have equity and serviceability but no knowledge. Some people have equity but no income. Some have income but no equity. Some people have no income or equity but have knowledge. Some people can do more by pooling their resources, more deals or larger deals, and some people JV with more experienced investors for the experience and to learn the process. Joint venture, a valuable tool. Joint ventures are absolutely a valuable tool to have in your property investing toolbox. Some people will be doing a JV because they have to, because they're limited in certain components and have to do a JV to be able to do their next deal, as compared to those people that choose to do a JV. So in your investing journey, you will get to a position where you in fact choose to do JVs because you're able to leverage your resources. You may have additional time, and by being able to do a JV, you can do another deal. You can put the time or your knowledge or your expertise into it, but not have to put the money in or the serviceability. In this situation, it's a choice decision that you're doing a JV, and you're doing it because you can leverage your position. A common question asked is, what types of strategies suit JVs? The answer to this is quite simple, all strategies. There's no one particular strategy that works best, whether it's a renovation or a subdivision, or a commercial deal, or multi-units. All strategies suit a JV. Roles in a JV. There are four basic roles in a JV, including doing or working party, experience, expertise, knowledge party, equity party, and serviceability party. The doing party or working party has to have time to do the doing. The experience, expertise, or knowledge party needs to know how to do the strategy or have had experience in doing the strategy in the past. They need the knowledge and the capacity to do the strategy. The equity party is the one with either the available equity or the cash, essentially the one with the money. Finally, the serviceability party is the one with the strong income, whether that's as a PAYG employee or as a business owner. This doesn't mean that you have to have four different individuals coming together in the JV. Instead, we are just showing you the four different roles that make up any one deal. In any deal, somebody has to do the doing, somebody has to have the experience, somebody has to have the equity, and somebody has to have the serviceability, but they may not be different people. If you're not doing a JV, then in fact you yourself are playing all of these four roles. But with a JV, it is two or more parties coming together to divvy up these various roles. You as the doing party. If you are the doing party, you are generally responsible for finding the deal or engaging with a buyer's agent or an agent to find the deal for you. Essentially, you are responsible for finding the deal, presenting the deal to the other JV partners, project managing the deal, and then delivering the deal as you had proposed or presented it at the beginning. It means that the doing party generally does have a higher level of pressure on them because in fact they're responsible for doing the doing and delivering what they said the deal was going to do. Considerations: security, for example, caveat on purchase property, payment, if paid during or at end, more cash equity upfront to start the deal, and what if the deal makes a loss? Do you have to contribute cash? The first consideration here is if you are the doing party, what security you are going to have over the property, over the deal. If you're the doer and you're not on the title or contributing funds in any way, then there is a question as to what security you are going to have for all the time and effort you're going to put into the deal. In that instance, you may look at putting a caveat on the purchased property. This is a conversation you need to have with your lawyer, but that's certainly something that you could consider. The second consideration is whether you are actually going to be paid during or at the end of the deal. If you are paid during the deal, obviously there needs to be much more cash and equity upfront to start the deal. For example, if you intend to get paid $30,000 for the 12 months that you are doing the deal, then that $30,000 needs to be available upfront. That means that the equity party has to have this sort of cash or equity to be able to do a deal with you. Another consideration is if the deal makes a loss. As the doing party, if you haven't contributed any cash or equity to the deal at the beginning and there is a loss situation, then you have to ask the question, do I actually have to contribute cash at the end to make up for the loss? This is definitely a question that needs to be addressed and answered very early on in the process. You as the equity party. When you are the equity party, there are two options. The first option is where you as the equity party are also a JV partner. You are part of the deal. You experience both the upside and the downside risk of being in the deal. You also get a split of the profit or loss from doing the deal. The second option is where you are putting money into the deal, but you're purely a private money lender. In that instance, you're putting cash into the deal and you will get a fixed return on your funds, and that's regardless of the success of the deal. In that instance, you would have a loan agreement or a mortgage in place to provide security for you in that situation. Considerations: security provided, for example, a caveat, contribution of all funds upfront, return of funds if it can't sell or refinance. An important question to consider if you're putting money into the deal, regardless of whether it's as a JV party or private money lender, is what security are you going to get over the funds that you have contributed? Once again, it may be a caveat, it may be a mortgage, or it may be a registered mortgage. There are alternatives that need to be considered and discussed with your lawyer in preparation of the agreements. You also need to consider your capacity to provide the funds upfront. When doing a JV, it can be dangerous if you don't have all the funds available upfront to complete the project. The situation where the funds are being drip-fed into the project is very risky. What if something happens and the funds don't become available, and this can compromise the whole project? It is always recommended that if you are the equity party, you need to put all of the funds to complete the deal upfront in an account that is quarantined for that particular deal. That way, all parties know that the funds are available to complete. You also need to consider how the funds are going to be returned if there is an event where, in fact, you can't sell the property or you can't refinance the property. In this instance, if you put cash into the deal, how do you actually get your cash back out? This needs to be covered early on in the negotiation of the joint venture. You as a serviceability party. The third component is you as the serviceability party. This means that you're the one whose name is going on the loan. You're providing the serviceability for the deal, in which case you need to be market ready from a lending perspective. If you're not market ready, then you're not able to fulfill your role in the JV agreement. You also need to be aware that if you are the serviceability party and you're on the loan, then this is going to impact on your future borrowing capacity because you already have your serviceability somewhat tied up in this deal. If you are on title and on the loan, you also need to be aware that you may be required to lodge tax returns and even possibly BAS statements on a regular basis throughout that project, depending on what the project is. Which comes first, the deal or the JV partner? A very common question asked is, do you find the deal first or do you find the JV partner first? There are pros and cons, advantages and disadvantages with each, so we will cover each separately. In this instance, you're going out and finding the JV partner first, without having a deal on the table. The advantage of finding the JV partner first is that it's a less stressful situation to put yourself in when you do come to then look at finding a deal and negotiating on the deal. Once you've found the deal, you typically have a limited time frame to fulfil the conditions of the purchase contract, in which case, if you haven't got a JV partner in place, it can be very stressful. This is because you're not only trying to fulfil the contract conditions, but you're also trying to find somebody to actually do the deal with. The advantage of finding the JV partner first is that it's generally less stressful once you come to the deal finding aspect. There's also the benefit of being able to have multiple JV partners waiting in the wings. You can have a number of people sitting there interested in doing a JV with you, and then depending on the deal that you find, you can match that deal to the JV partners that you've already pre-negotiated with. As you will come to see, it can take time to make decisions on the many aspects that need to be decided between the parties in the JV, so having a JV partner in advance can definitely be advantageous. You've already got all of the negotiations done and agreed on the terms of your JV agreement ahead of time, and this means that when you come to find a deal, you're ready to hit the ground running. Being able to match the deal to the JV partner's capacity is also very advantageous. If you've got the JV partner first and you know what their equity and serviceability capabilities are, then you can go and find a deal that matches their capabilities. Finding the deal first. Let's look at the advantages and disadvantages with finding the deal first and then going out and finding a JV partner to match that deal. When you're finding the deal first and you in fact don't have a JV partner sitting there ready to go, you're going to have to make some assumptions in terms of the location of the deal, what price point you're able to be looking at, and what strategy you're going to do. You have to make assumptions in order to be able to go and find the deal, and then hope that those match the party that you eventually do the JV with. For example, you will have to make an assumption on a median price to be able to target areas of interest. That might mean doing your numbers and your feasibilities on, say, a $450,000 purchase price, and then finding the deal that matches that criteria, and then taking that to the market in terms of finding a JV. Obviously, when you have found the deal first, you know what amount of money the JV partner needs to have and what serviceability is required, so you can then find the JV partner that fulfills that requirement, hence simplify the process. Another consideration when you find the deal first without having a JV partner ready to go is that it can be a stressful situation. This is because having found the deal, you then have to put a contract on it, decide on the purchasing entity name to put on the contract, get finance, do your due diligence on the deal, and then add to this the stress of having to find a JV partner. This is an extra pressure in that you may find yourself becoming increasingly desperate to find that JV partner. In your desperation, it can result in poor decisions being made, a poor JV partner match, or not going through the JV process thoroughly, and there can be major implications with doing that. Even though you can find the deal first, There are absolute advantages in having a JV partner waiting in the wings, and that's what we would advocate because this is a more manageable process. Finding deals and JV partners in tandem. It takes time to find the right JV partner, and it takes time to find the right deal. If they are done sequentially one after the other, the time frame can therefore become drawn out and may not be the most efficient process. Instead, it is recommended that you do the two in tandem and spend time cultivating joint venture relationships at the same time as actually researching the deals. That way, the two processes can be married together and it expedites the whole process. Structuring JVs. There are three different ways to structure a JV deal. The first is where you have equal party contributions. The second is where you have an unequal contribution, so one party is contributing more than another party. And the third is where you have the money partner and the working party scenario. Before detailing each of these structures, it is important to remember that you must get legal and accounting advice in advance before you consider any structuring of a joint venture. You need to put every JV opportunity in front of your lawyer and accountant to confirm what the specific structure needs to be for that joint venture. Every situation is slightly different, and you need to get the advice up front because it can be very costly if you get this step wrong. 1. Equal contributions. There are several scenarios that are classed as equal contributions, one being where both parties are contributing equal amounts of money and both are included in the loan documents. Another is where one party has equity but little serviceability for the loan, and the other party has good serviceability but little or no equity. In each scenario, both parties need to come together in order to borrow efficiently. There are two main ways that this type of arrangement can be structured, and each are described in detail below. 1. Partnership of trusts. 2. Newly formed corporate trustee. Partnership of trusts. In this structure, each party has their own corporate trustee and a partnership is created between the two trustees. The property would be owned as tenants in common between the trusts. The purchasing entity is the two trusts in partnership. Hence, the corporate trustees are shown both on the purchasing contract and on the loan. This structure allows for fractional ownership as well as 50-50 deals, and that's because the tenants in common ownership arrangement can be split in any percentage. It could be a 20-80 or a 70-30, so it gives a level of flexibility. In this instance, each individual party is taking on each other's debt, and that's a very important consideration. When the bank comes to look at your capacity to borrow, they're looking at both of you and your capacity to in fact take over the serviceability of each other's part contribution. There is a diagram that outlines this structure. Newly formed corporate trustee. The second opportunity is to set up a completely new corporate trustee. The new corporate trustee is set up where both parties become the directors. Both parties are also primary beneficiaries of the discretionary trust, and both parties are nominated as the appointors of the discretionary trust. It's important to ensure that no one party has more control than the other, hence why both are listed as appointors. This sort of structure, though, does not allow for fractional or uneven ownership. It is a 50-50 split. However, it can be slightly easier to finance than the previous partnership arrangement example. There's a diagram in your module that outlines this structure. 2. Unequal contributions. When each of the parties in the JV is contributing an unequal amount, there are three main ways to structure this type of arrangement, including partnership of trusts, unit trust, and a hybrid trust. Partnership of trusts. As described above, with a partnership of trusts and the property bought as tenants in common, there is the ability to manage an unequal contribution between parties. An example could be where one party contributes 70% to the deal and the other party contributes 30% to the deal. These percentages may reflect their time and effort input into the deal, or their expertise, or the amount of cash that they have brought to the table. It all depends on their role in the JV. Hence, you will need to negotiate on what your percentage split is going to be. There's a diagram in your module to represent this structure. Unit trust. An alternative when you have unequal contributions between JV parties is to set up a unit trust with a corporate trustee and with the units held in each of the individual parties' discretionary trusts or piggy bank trusts. This will be a new entity set up for this project. The property is purchased in the unit trust. There can be a few capital gains tax problems or issues when dealing with a unit trust type structure. For example, if it's treated as a fixed trust, it may not be entitled to the 50% exemption for owning a property for more than 12 months. You will need to consider this in your choice of structuring. There's a diagram in the module again to outline this structure. Hybrid trust. The third way to structure an unequal contribution between JV parties is to do the deal under a hybrid trust type arrangement. This involves a corporate trustee at the top, then a hybrid trust, and the units owned in the discretionary trusts of each party. In this instance, the discretionary trust could be your piggy bank trust. This hybrid trust structure eliminates any capital gains tax issues because a hybrid trust is entitled to the 50% exemption for owning the property longer than 12 months. A hybrid trust can, however, be difficult to finance, and this needs to be considered early on in the process. The percentage ownership can be apportioned in whatever percentages are agreed upon. Once again, there is a diagram in your module to outline this structure. 3. Money partner and working partner scenario. The third structuring alternative is where you have a money partner and working partner scenario. This is where you have a money partner that does not need the working partner on title or on the loan in order to buy the property. The money partner contributes both the cash and the serviceability to the deal, and the working party does the doing and brings the expertise. The money partner and the working partner would each set up their own corporate trustee with a discretionary trust. The money partner has the serviceability, and they are the ones that the bank wants to see on the loan, as that party is the one that is purchasing the property and will be the one on the contract. Hence, the money partner's trust would own the property, and they would be named as the primary beneficiary and the appointor of the trust and director of the corporate trustee. The working party would be the director of their own corporate trustee and would be the primary beneficiary of their discretionary trust. The working party is the one doing the doing in the joint venture arrangement. A contract would therefore be drawn up between the money party's entity and the worker party's entity, company as trustee for a discretionary trust. The worker's trust would be protected by the contract, which would outline the duties and responsibilities of each party and the agreed upon distribution profits. Once again, you'll see a diagram in your module. Working partner business structure. The final consideration when looking at structuring is the opportunity to create a business structure when doing joint ventures. Ultimately, you want to have a project management entity that actually runs your property management business. This is so that the worker party in the joint venture is able to create an income stream over time that is seen as income rather than a profit split, and therefore allows the worker to generate serviceability from a borrowing perspective down the track. The entity that is being created is the same corporate trustee with a discretionary trust beneath and would be called the project management or business entity. That entity never actually owns property. It is just a service management entity that is paid fees for the work that it does. It doesn't get a profit split. It is paid a fee for service, which over time is classed as a legitimate income from a serviceability perspective in the future for lending. Instead of getting a chunk of money that is classed as profit, you would receive smaller amounts of money that are classed as income because it's from a project management role. An added advantage of this structure would also be that the project management entity would be able to claim business expenses, for example, car, office expenses, phone, business travel, etc. There's a diagram in your module that highlights in red the project management entity. Profit split. What's fair? The next consideration when doing a JV is the profit split, and a common question asked is what profit split is fair? The answer to this seemingly complicated question is in fact quite simple. It is whatever all parties agree on and whatever is negotiated. A way to consider how you might split the profit is to base each of the contributing roles as 25% of a deal. For example, 25% is the doing or the working party, 25% is the experience, expertise or knowledge party, 25% is the equity party, and 25% is the serviceability party. In this example, the doing or the working party is the one that has the time and is doing the doing, and this is classed as 25% of the deal. The person who's bringing the experience, the expertise and knowledge to the deal is 25%. The equity party, the person that's bringing the equity or cash to the deal, represents another 25%. Then the serviceability party is the final 25%. So in that instance, a typical 50-50 JV split or profit split might be where you have one party who is bringing the experience and is the working party and is going to be doing all of the doing, and then the second party is the equity and serviceability party. This is the person who has the cash and has got the serviceability, but for whatever reason doesn't have time to do the deal or doesn't have experience to do the deal, or is just choosing to leverage their equity and serviceability to get into another deal. This situation would be a perfect 50-50 split. Alternatively, if you had somebody that was only bringing the serviceability and the working party was in fact bringing the time, the experience, plus the equity, well, then you would look to modify your profit split accordingly. Some JVs work on a 30-30-30 split, where the doing partner represents 30%, the serviceability partner represents 30%, and the money partner represents 30%. Ultimately, the split will be whatever two parties agree upon. Selling versus holding in a JV. When doing a JV, a consideration is whether you should be looking to sell or hold a property in a joint venture. There's no right or wrong answer to this, and you can do both. However, if you are holding a property on completion, you have to consider how you're going to refinance that property at the end. Also, if you have a working party involved in the JV, how are you going to pay out that party if you're not intending to sell? Again, is it through refinancing, or are you able to pay them out of another fund? Be aware that there may also be tax implications with this situation. Let's now consider the scenario where both parties are choosing to hold some of the deal. In this instance, you might have to consider selling your half of that property to the other JV party, and vice versa, with their property. This is so that you end up with both parties having standalone loans that are 100% secured by your own property. Here's an example of this to explain it a bit better. You are holding two properties, and each of those properties are owned 50-50 between the two parties, depending on how you've structured the JV. If you each want to hold, then you may not want to be the 50-50 arrangement for the duration of your hold, for example, 5 to 10 years, let's say. In that case, you may need to consider selling half of your share in one of the properties to the other party, and they sell their half share in the other property to you. This is so that you each end up with your own property wholly owned in your own structure and under your own lending capabilities. The payment of GST on newly created product that's sold within the first 5 years is also a consideration in a JV scenario. For example, if one of the JV parties chooses to hold some of the deal on completion, but then decides to sell within the 5 years, and hence GST is potentially payable on that sale, then the question is who should be paying for the GST? Should it be the JV in the early instance, or is it the party that ended up holding the property? Again, there is no right or wrong answer to how this should be dealt with, but definitely it is something that needs to be flagged from the outset and some decisions made so that everyone is clear on the agreed process from the very beginning of the deal. This is definitely not a conversation you want to be having 3 years after the deal is completed. Documentation for JVs. The next component to consider is the documentation required for JVs. There are two main documents that can be used, and it just depends on the way you've structured the JV as to which is most relevant. 1. Joint venture agreement, usually used when all JV parties are on the loan. And 2. Project management agreement, usually used when there is a working party involved in the JV and they are not on the loan. This is the contract between the working party and the money party discussed above in the structuring section. Regardless of which documentation is used, it must be in writing, it must be signed by all parties, and absolutely it should be formalised by a lawyer prior to you starting the deal. Even though you can get JV agreements off the internet and you can get project management agreements off the internet, doesn't mean you should, and this is a perfect example of when you shouldn't. You need to ensure that this document is legally prepared and covers all parties, because at the end of the day that's the only thing that you have got to fall back on to protect your interests. Given that we are generally talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, This is definitely not the place to money pinch and to try to save a few bucks. Keep that for other parts of the project, like the renovation or the landscaping. So what needs to be covered in the JV agreement, and what are the questions that you need to ask and the decisions that you need to make with your JV partners to put that agreement together? The best thing you can do is sit down with your JV partner and write down all the questions that need to be addressed and what decisions need to be made. It's recommended when you are going through this process that you are in front of the JV partners that you're looking to do the deal with, because this is a long-term relationship, usually 6 to 12 months depending on the length of the deal, and it needs the required time to ensure that all parties are the right mix. Sitting down and discussing all of the possible outcomes for that deal is essential. Obviously, you need to decide on the structure and get legal and accounting advice on that. You need to determine the duties and responsibilities of each party. You need to know who's doing what and who's responsible for what. You need to confirm how decisions will be made, who is going to make the decision on what the paint colour is, and who's going to ultimately make the decision on which builder to go with, or which real estate agent you're going to list the property for sale with. These are all very important roles to be determined and documented. The next is to determine the financial commitment between the parties. Who's putting in money, who's providing serviceability, and then having that documented. You need to also consider who's authorised to pay the bills and what bank account it is, what money is to be held, and who's actually going to be physically paying the bills. It's a simple thing, but it's very important, and this is where every role and every process needs to be considered and identified. Ensure that the person or persons identified have the capabilities to do whatever is required. The next consideration is how regular your communication between the parties will be and in what manner. Is this a weekly email or is it a fortnightly meeting? Because at the end of the day, communication is essential in a JV and you need to plan for it and agree to how you're going to communicate and how frequently so that it's upfront and everybody understands the expectations. Another consideration is dispute resolution. What happens if you can't agree on something? What is the dispute resolution process? This needs to be well documented in your JV agreement so that it's already on the table from the outset, and it's very clear what the process would be if a situation arose where you just couldn't come to an agreement. In summary, the decisions to be made need to include the JV structure, roles, duties and responsibilities of each party, decision-making process, for example, paint colour, builder, landscaping, real estate agent, etc., financial commitment of each party, who authorises and pays the bills and from what bank account, how regularly will you communicate and in what manner, email, meetings, recorded Skype call, etc., and dispute resolution process. The next step in putting together the JV is to ask yourself the what-if questions. Consider what you would do if the property doesn't sell for asking price. Can you drop the price, and if so, what do you drop it to and when do you drop it? You need to have a process in place in advance of purchasing the property for if these situations arise. There's no use just sweeping it under the carpet and saying, oh well, our intention is that it is going to sell for asking price. You need to consider and have answers written into your agreement about how you will handle the situation if it arises. You need to have it documented. What if it doesn't sell at all? What happens then? Or what if you can't rent it? Then what happens in that situation? What if you run out of money? What do you do in that scenario? What if somebody in the JV dies or gets divorced? How is the JV going to cover off on that? What if the doing party can no longer do the doing? What happens in that situation? What if somebody in the JV gets sued or goes bankrupt? These are all things that we hope not to ever happen, but if they do, you need to have them addressed and covered off on upfront. What if you don't agree on something? What processes are you going to have in place for this? What if you don't get the approval required? If you're getting council approval, what's the fallback scenario, for example, if you were applying for 4 units and you only get approval for 3? What happens in that scenario? What if it takes longer than expected? Your best estimate may be that it is a 6-month deal, but what happens if it ends up taking 12 months? Can the party sustain that duration? And what measures are going to be put into place to manage that? And finally, what if the deal makes a loss? What happens in that situation if money is lost from doing the deal? Are the parties equally contributing to make up that loss, or is one party wearing that downfall? Once again, this needs to be considered, discussed, and agreed to. In summary, the major what-if questions that need to be answered and included in the JV agreement include: what if it doesn't sell for the asking price? Do we drop price, and to what and when? What if it doesn't sell or rent? What if we run out of money? What if somebody dies or gets divorced, etc.? What if the doing party can no longer do? What if someone gets sued or goes bankrupt? What if we don't agree on something? What if we don't get the approval required? What if it takes longer than expected? And what if we make a loss? Pacific Law has a fantastic joint venture checklist on their website, and it's also included in the appendix of this module. Some of what has been covered above is included in the checklist. However, it also gets down to specifics in terms of who is going on title and who is going to be the serviceability partner, etc. It is highly recommended that you complete the checklist and add additional details as discussed throughout this module in preparation for having a JV project management agreement drawn up. Once you've agreed on the answers to the questions above, the JV partners would consider signing a document that's often called a Memorandum of Understanding. That's where all of the parties in the JV agree on the terms and the questions and the answers that they've discussed. The Memorandum of Understanding, along with your JV checklist, can then be given to the lawyer to formally draw up the JV agreement. The more questions you can answer in advance and the more what-if questions you can cover off on before you actually get to the lawyer, the less time it's going to take the lawyer to prepare the document, and the cheaper it's going to be for you. This is where taking the time in advance is very advantageous. Legal documents are there to protect both parties and minimise misunderstanding and miscommunication, which is why they are so essential. You are now aware that the handshake deal is not good enough and should never be entered into, and neither is an agreement that's written on the back of an envelope or downloaded off the internet. It must be a purpose-prepared document for your deal and for the parties involved. Each party must sign, date, and witness it, and each party must get a signed copy and keep it in a safe place. This is because if an issue arises, and if all you have is an undated and unsigned agreement, it won't legally hold water. You absolutely need to be diligent in this aspect. Don't be swayed by a less informed party just because they say the deal can be done without an agreement. You must stick to your guns and demand it. Otherwise, do not do the deal. There is too much at stake. One other consideration is to cover off on the lawyer that prepared the JV agreement and who they represent. For example, if there was ever an issue between the JV parties, which party is the lawyer actually going to represent? This is because the one lawyer can't represent both parties. That would be a conflict of interest. So you will need to consider upfront which party ends up with the lawyer that prepared the document. The other party or parties need to understand that they would have to find their own lawyer if a situation arose. Having that conversation upfront so that you're in agreement before you get into the deal is key. Project management agreement and profit share agreement. A project management agreement and a profit share agreement should cover everything that's been covered above for the JV agreement. Plus, they also cover how the project management fees are going to be paid to the working party, or how the profit is going to be split or adjusted if project management fees have also been paid. Hence, they may be very similar documents, but they do have different names depending on whether the party or parties are on the loan agreement or whether there's a working party involved. Sourcing JV partners. A critical part of the JV process is actually sourcing JV partners and confirming that you are the right mix to work together and what deals are right for you. The section below details out this process, including where to source JV partners, conducting your due diligence to ensure you are right for each other, otherwise referred to as the interview process, questions to ask at the interview, confidentiality agreement, what does the perfect JV partner look like, presenting yourself as a doing JV partner when you don't yet have a deal, and presenting a deal. Where to source JV partners. Where do you find people that want to do JVs and want to be in a deal with you? The answer to this is simple: networking. There is no other way to create joint ventures other than being prepared to get out there and talk to people. It's about forming relationships and connecting with people in order to find out what their needs are and being able to bring both parties together. Some suggestions on where you may find potential JV partners include meetup groups, investor groups, conference attendees and students, your mobile phone, friends and relatives, colleagues, acquaintances, referrals, accountant, lawyer, broker, town planner, tradies, etc., etc., cultivating and building relationships. There are lots of investor and small developer meetup groups that come together purely for networking and are a fantastic source of potential contacts. You've got conferences and seminars, and so all of the Success Accelerator Mastermind events, Ultimate events, and Quantum events should be on your radar. Every time you attend these events, you should be talking to the people around you, talking to the students, talking to the attendees, and in that process, identifying other people's needs and whether they match your requirements. Have your business cards ready to hand out, and don't be afraid to ask people for their business cards or contact details if there is a potential connection there. Yes, for some of you, there may be a minute or two of discomfort to start the conversation and ask for their contacts, but it will yield you tenfold if you push yourself through the discomfort. It's from discomfort that we know that we are growing and stretching ourselves. If you are not used to initiating the conversation, some simple questions you can use to break the ice and to introduce yourself are, is this your first time to this event? Or, so where are you at in your investing journey? Or, what did you think of that last presentation or session? Remember that the more prepared you are when going into any situation, the more confident you will be and the more likely you will be to push yourself out of your comfort zone. Then what you will find is that it's never as bad as you thought it was going to be. And just by pushing yourself to do it, you will be proud of yourself and inclined to keep doing it so that it no longer becomes an issue for you. The next source of potential JV partners is in your mobile phone. You will be absolutely amazed if you take the time to go through all of the contacts in your phone as to how many potential people there are that you could contact to have this discussion with and find out what their requirements are and whether they are likely to be or know someone who would be likely to be interested in a JV. Obviously, you have relatives as potential JV partners too. This is an interesting conversation and you have to make a judgment call on this and whether in fact you would do deals and joint ventures with your relatives. Keep in mind that regardless of the outcome of the deal, there's a good chance you're going to have to spend Christmas together and birthdays together, so you will need to consider the worst case scenario. What happens if you don't make money from the deal? Is that going to strain relationships between the relatives, and is that what you want to do? On the other hand, for some people, doing JVs with relatives is absolutely fantastic. They may have been in business before and work fantastically together. For other people, however, it will be a definite no, and that's perfect as well. There is no right or wrong answer to this, as long as you have thought through the process thoroughly and diligently asked all of the questions that need to be addressed. Doing JVs with friends is a similar consideration. Do you have the sort of relationship with your friends that you want to potentially do deals together, or do you put that friendship ahead of everything else and don't want to compromise that with a potential outcome from a deal? We are talking worst case scenarios here, but you need to think about it because you are dealing in the open market, and regardless of all the efforts that you put in, things do happen in the market that are outside of our control, and you need to consider what the worst case scenario could be and decide if you are comfortable with that. You've also got colleagues and acquaintances that can be a fantastic source of potential JVs and also referrals. So yes, you can talk to your accountants and your lawyers and your mortgage broker and your town planners and tradespeople. Find out from them if they have clients or if they are working with other people that may be interested in doing a JV, and you could complement each other by coming together. You need to put yourself out there as to what it is you're looking for and leveraging off the contacts of the team around you. Ultimately, this is about cultivating and building relationships, so you've got to be prepared to have these conversations and to ask the question of people around you as to whether they're in a situation or want to be in a situation to do a joint venture with you. The worst case scenario is that they will say no, and in that situation, don't take it personally. Just recognise that this is a numbers game, and that the more people you speak with, the more likely you will be to find your perfect match from a JV perspective. The interview process. Once you have sourced potential JV partners, The next thing is to sit down and have an interview process style conversation with them to work out whether you're right for each other. As much as you want to be friends and have a fantastic relationship with your JV partner, at the end of the day, this is business, and you should treat your review of potential JV partners from that perspective, from a very business-like perspective. This is why the reference to an interview process is being used here, because becoming best friends with your JV partner could actually complicate the situation. This is because when you're doing a JV, there are instances where difficult situations have to be dealt with, and you need to ensure that you're working with people that can work through these situations with you. Preparation is key, not only in the sourcing of JVs, but also in the interview process. The more time you spend preparing for the meeting, the better the outcome is going to be. In fact, it is recommended that you spend more time preparing for the meeting or preparing for a phone call than actually in the meeting or on the phone call. That is because spending that time being prepared actually gives you significant confidence. You can go into that meeting with confidence that you know how the conversation is going to progress. Obviously, you don't know what the outcome of the conversation is going to be, but you know what you are going to be covering in that conversation. Part of the preparation process also needs to be you putting yourself in the shoes of the other party and making a list of all of the questions that they might have. Remember that they may never have thought about doing a joint venture at all, and here you are having a conversation proposing to them the possibility of doing a JV. Be sensitive to this and think about all of the questions as if you were in their shoes. What sort of questions would you have? Spend the time in advance to think of answers to each and every one of those questions so that when you come to have the meeting, you've already thought about a lot of the questions that they could potentially have for you. It's unlikely that you are going to be able to cover off on absolutely everything, but the more prepared you are, the more confident you're going to be to go into that negotiation and have that discussion. Another important point when you are having a meeting or having phone calls with potential JV partners is to ensure that all of the decision makers are present at every meeting or conversation. This is because of the effect of Chinese whispers. The danger with this is that when you don't have all of the decision makers at the meeting, and then somebody has to relay to another party what was covered in that meeting, you can get distortion of information. It's possible that in the transfer of that information, the other party has got a completely different perspective from what was initially discussed. For efficiency, you absolutely want to have everybody at every meeting so that everything that is discussed is agreed on with all of the relevant parties present. For example, if you are dealing with a husband and wife, but only the husband is at the meeting, you need to realise that the wife is probably going to ask a whole series of questions once the husband comes home, and maybe the husband isn't the best equipped to answer her questions. He may be a bit vague on the details or may mis-relay some of the information, whereas you are much closer to the process and will be much better equipped to answer her questions and explain to her the process. And so for that reason, it is much better to have the husband and the wife at the meeting together. That way you can address both of them in the one go. Having all the decision makers in the one place is very important and should not be underestimated. It is also highly recommended that you spend time after the meeting to review the process and make yourself notes. This is because you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel every time you meet with a new JV partner. By taking notes that you can come back to and review before your next meeting or next phone conversation will save you significantly in time and will greatly enhance your outcome because you are constantly improving on your methodology. This whole process can definitely be a learnt skill. So for those of you that this doesn't come naturally to, which is most of us, just know that by following the process detailed in this module, you can learn the techniques and teach yourself how to become comfortable and proficient with this process. Some questions that you would ask yourself and document after each meeting and conversation include: what worked? What didn't work? What would you do differently next time? And what extra questions did they ask that you hadn't previously thought about? With this last point, you want to write down the questions and then come up with a valid answer to each, so that every time you go through this process of looking for a JV partner, you're continually improving on the process and documenting your process. This is because it might be another 6 to 12 months before you come to do your next JV, and you don't want to have forgotten everything you did the first time and then be forced to reinvent the wheel. By documenting it all as you go, you will then always have it to refer back to, and you will create a template for yourself. You will have something to go back to and review before the next meeting, so you are already pre-prepared and feeling much more confident in going into the process. This documentation process will take you an extra 5 to 10 minutes after each conversation or meeting, but it will be the best 5 or 10 minutes that you spend. Please do not tell yourself that you will be able to remember what you did in 6 to 12 months' time, as for the majority of us, this is just not the case, and you don't want to waste the previous learnings that you had. Remember, we are about continually striving for improvement. Questions to ask in the interview process. During the interview process, you need to ask a lot of questions in order to better understand the other party. Ask questions to understand their risk profile, capacity to tolerate change or flexibility, nature, are they a worrier, stressful, poor sleeper, aggressive, negative attitude, poor communicator, history, previous experience in business or property, etc., and money management capacity. This process may take a number of meetings before you can agree to become JV partners, but consider having them sign a confidentiality agreement at the first meeting if you are talking deal specifics, and then summarise your intentions in a memorandum of understanding to be taken to your lawyer. So let's review these one by one. Risk profile. You need to ask questions to get a handle on what their risk profile is. You're not necessarily asking them outright, what's your risk profile, but instead it's asking questions like, what type of job do you have and how long have you been doing it? This is because their job can give you clues on what their risk profile is. For example, if they've been in the same job for the last 20 years, then that gives you an indication that they're used to a very consistent, regular, reliable process in their daily affairs. Similarly, if they've been an employee versus self-employed person, a self-employed person generally has more uncertainty in their life and has to chase new work on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis, and often it comes with a lot more complexities in their daily routine. This is in contrast to somebody that's an employee and who knows that their job is always going to be there. Capacity to tolerate change, flexibility. You need to gain an understanding of their capacity to tolerate change, if they are flexible or not. A type of question that you can ask in that regard is, how would you handle it if your luggage got lost on an international flight? For some people, that would be absolutely traumatic. They would be stressed, experience anxiety, and be beside themselves. Well, maybe that sort of person is not the best person to go into a JV with, given that there can be lots of uncertainty when doing a deal. For example, uncertainty with regards to council approvals, uncertainty with regards to bank finance, uncertainty with regards to the sale of properties, and the list goes on. So you want people that have a capacity to be flexible and not too highly strung. You could specifically ask them, how would you handle changes in council approval or conditions? For example, if you are applying for 4 units and council came back with approval for 3 units, how would you handle that? If a potential JV partner shows signs of being highly stressed by that scenario, then that is potentially a flag to show you that they might not be the right person to be in a JV with. Nature. The aim here is to identify the nature of the person or the people that you're looking to do the JV with. Are they stressful people, poor sleepers, showing signs of aggression, having a negative attitude, or poor communicators? These are all flags that you need to be looking for, because this is going to be a 6 to 12 month or longer relationship, and you need to ensure from the outset that you are working with people that you are going to be able to sustain a relationship with. You don't want to get halfway through the deal and find out that in fact the person is a complete stress head and it doesn't matter what happens, they are just beside themselves with worry and putting that worry onto you when you're trying to do the doing with the deal. You need to unearth this as early on in the process as possible. History. Additional questions are to be asked in terms of their history and the previous experience that they bring. It might be previous experience in business or with a property or in a property deal. What you are trying to identify is whether they are bringing baggage from previous dealings, as this is something you really want to know about up front. For example, if their last business went broke, then there is a likelihood that they are going to be bringing negative baggage with them. This is not a reason to not to do a JV with them. It just means that you need to ask more questions. Another question might be, did their employees ever steal money from them? Potentially, there could be some trust issues that may come out during the JV. And again, we want to be aware of this sooner rather than later. Perhaps their last business partner was a complete nightmare. Again, they are probably going to bring baggage with them in that regard. Did they lose everything in the GFC? That is going to impact on people's approach to deals in the future. And you need to be aware of that if you're going to go into a long-term relationship with this person. Another question to ask them is whether they have had a bad experience with a real estate agent in the past. That may bring up challenges that you need to have identified up front. It's not that every person that has been in business and that has gone broke, or that has had employees steal money from them, or that has had a bad experience with an agent is not a good JV partner. That's not what's being said here. Instead, this is about awareness and understanding that you need to do some further digging to really understand people's history and their previous experiences in order to know what they might be bringing with them to this deal. Money management. You'll also want to consider their money management. Have they been a long-term saver with good money management skills, or are they a poor saver? If they are the one responsible for the money in the deal, and in fact their previous history hasn't shown that they have good money management skills, then that's a red flag. Maybe they are coming into the deal because they've got a significant amount of money from an inheritance, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are actually good with money management. Identifying this from the outset is important. Confidentiality agreement. You might want to consider having the potential JV partner sign a confidentiality agreement when you are having your initial dealings with them, particularly if you are talking about specific deals that are real and on the market. If you are discussing locations, addresses, and deal specifics, then you certainly might want to consider them signing a confidentiality agreement before you start those conversations. Alternatively, if you come together to discuss formalising the JV in advance and then you go and find a deal later, a confidentiality agreement isn't going to be relevant. Certainly, getting to know your JV partner can take numerous meetings. It isn't just a one meeting and we're done situation, because there is a lot to consider and there are a lot of questions to be asked, so you need to be prepared to have multiple meetings. Once you're comfortable that the parties are the right mix and you have asked all of the questions as to how you would look to put the JV together and all of the what-if questions have been covered, then that's when you would summarise those intentions in a memorandum of understanding. It's this MOU that you would then provide to the lawyer or solicitor for them to draw up into a formal agreement. What does the perfect JV partner look like? A perfect JV partner is a partner that complements your contribution to the deal. For example, if you are the doing party, you don't necessarily want another doing party. You want people that can do what you can't. So whatever it is that you can't bring to the deal, that's what you want in your JV partner. If you are the doing party and you don't have serviceability or equity, then serviceability and equity is what you need from your JV partner. You are looking for someone to fill the roles that you can't. You also want people that do what they say they are going to do or what they agreed to do. If someone says, "I'll ring you next Tuesday and we'll organise a meeting time," and in fact they don't ring until Thursday, that's a red flag. If they are doing that at the very early stages of your dealings together, how responsive are they going to be when you get to loan documents stage, for example, and when there are specific timeframes for when documents need to be signed? As you can see, you definitely need people that do what they say they are going to do. Also, look for solution-focused, pragmatic, flexible, positive people. This is because the opposite traits of all of these would be people that would be much harder to maintain a relationship with over the duration of the JV. So again, don't ignore it when you're having those initial conversations and initial interviews. Don't ignore red flags or signs that you pick up just because you are desperate to do a JV. You want people that are easy to work with and that are positive and are a good mix for you. It is absolutely essential. Look for good communicators, people that you can sit down with and be very specific with, get answers from, and then move on. Presenting yourself as a doing JV partner when you don't yet have a deal. In the earlier part of this module, it was suggested that the best scenario is to develop the JV relationship first and then go and find the deal that suits. This then raises the question, particularly if you are the doing party, how do you present yourself as the doer to potential JV partners when in fact you don't have a deal on the table? The answer to this is being able to demonstrate your experience to the JV party, which is often best done using a written document. After you have had your initial meeting and your general discussions, you would at that meeting then provide the JV party with a written document that details all of the items outlined below, and that you would step them through item by item. Demonstrate your experience or expertise. Detail your process for finding a deal and indicators for what makes a deal stack up. Present a sample deal and the process involved, expected timeframes and key milestones, likely cash or available equity required, and likely serviceability required. Demonstrate your experience or expertise. To promote yourself as the doing party, you will need to demonstrate your experience and expertise. Think about it like a resume. If you've got previous deals that you've done, previous renovations, previous bills, even if it's a PPR, or experience in subdivision, then showing those previous projects with photographs is fantastic. If, however, this is your first deal, then you really need to leverage off the skills of the team around you. You can acknowledge to them, this is my first JV, but I have been actively researching and educating myself on property investment for X period of time. I'm part of a mentoring program and I have a coach that I work with that has the experience and the skills in doing these types of deals. You can also emphasize your team of lawyers, accountants, and town planners and their expertise in order to demonstrate that you have the skills to pull this sort of joint venture together and do the deal. Detail your process for finding deals. You should detail your process for finding a deal and explain what makes a deal stack up. Show them that you've got the capacity as a doer to go and find the deal. Educate them on what sort of population size you are going to be focusing on, what sort of volume in the market you are looking for and why, what manufactured growth strategy you plan to target and why. You need to give the JV party confidence that you know what you are doing and you know how you are going to go about it. Present a sample deal and the process involved. Even though you may not have a deal on the table to present to the JV party, it is recommended that you present a sample deal to them and detail the process to do that sort of deal, including the feasibility. For example, if you are looking at doing a subdivision deal together, you would put a sample subdivision deal to them, maybe one lot into two. You would include a sample feasibility and show them what the process would involve, including the timeframes and key milestones along the way, the cash, equity required, and serviceability required. Outline what the likely cash or available equity required is going to be, because they'll need to know this. Do they need $100,000 to do this type of deal? Are they going to need $300,000? You'll need to provide that information when you are presenting, and also outlining the likely serviceability that's going to be required. This will give them confidence that you can do the deal and that you can manage the process and that this is the sort of numbers and the sort of profit that you are looking to achieve and that they could expect. Certainly, having a professional presentation is important. The more professional you can be in your approach to your JVs, the better the outcome is going to be. The above description has been framed around the doing party. However, if you are the serviceability party or the equity party, then you should expect this same level of detail from everybody that you are looking to go into a JV with. So whether you're the doer or whether you're the equity or serviceability partner, you should still have covered off on all of the items that have been discussed. You should understand the expected timeframes and the key milestones so that you have an understanding of whether you are targeting a 6-month deal or a 12-month deal. And once you find the deal, what the actual process is. Presenting a deal. When you have found a deal, you will want to present it to your JV partner through a written document or PowerPoint presentation. Ensure that it is professionally presented and covers off on the following. Project proposal summary. In point form, summarize all of the important components of the particular deal that you are presenting. Photos. The more photos that you can include, the better. Draft feasibility. Include a draft feasibility covering the amount of cash required up front to do the deal and what serviceability is required. Project timeline and stages. Include information on the project timeline and the stages involved. Exit strategies. Outline multiple exit strategies in your proposal. The exit strategy on a subdivision might be that you could sell it with a DA Or you could go ahead and do the subdivision and sell the vacant land. Or you could sell the existing front house. You could build on the back or on the subdivided land. Or instead of selling, you could rent. If, for example, you end up with five different exit strategies, you will need to articulate and explain these to the JV partners so that they're aware of what the deal entails. Risk factors and mitigation. Detail what the risk factors are and how you're going to mitigate against them. Be upfront with what the risks are with doing this sort of deal. For example, there may be no guarantee that you will get the approval through council. Maybe this is the first time that this sort of deal has been done in this suburb, and therefore there are not a lot of comparable sales. The risk is then that the end product may be undervalued. There may be a risk from a financing perspective. Flag these risks in your proposal. Property details. Give specifics around the property details, for example, land size, address, lot and plan number, zoning, frontage, and any other relevant details. Contract details. If you have a contract in place or are looking to put a contract in place, you should outline the contract details. What entity are you proposing to purchase in? What sort of conditions would you propose to put in the contract or have already put into the contract? What price are you proposing to offer or have already offered? Comparable sales. Do not forget to include comparable sales. In your feasibility, you will have an amount that you have purchased the property for or are looking to purchase the property for. You will also have an estimated amount that the end product is either going to be sold for or its market value on completion, if it's going to be held. You need to be able to justify these figures, and you do so with comparable sales. For example, if you are buying an 800 square metre block with a 3-bedroom house on it and paying $450,000, you'll need to demonstrate that that $450,000 is market value or is under market value. This is so that the JV partners have an understanding as to what the deal is that you are purchasing, and then the comparable sales on the end product. If you are subdividing and ending up with vacant land, what are the comparable sales, and what is the end value of the vacant land? What is the end value of townhouses, if you are producing townhouses? What are the comparable sales to justify the end value that you are using in your feasibility to calculate the profit in the deal? Location research. This is a summary of the macro and micro factors that explain why you have been looking at a deal in that particular city or town, why you are actually looking in that suburb, and why you are looking in that particular street. You should be able to give a robust conversation and justification as to why you are choosing a property in that particular area. Real estate agents' feedback. Speak with local real estate agents about what you are proposing with the deal. Explain your strategy, whether it's a renovation, subdivision, or multi-units, and ask for feedback from the agents in terms of what the market wants and where. Summarise the real estate agent's feedback for your JV partner. Doing JVs with professionals: builder, real estate agent, town planner, or engineer. If you are looking to do a joint venture with a professional like a builder, real estate agent, town planner, or an engineer, there are some specific considerations with this, because this arrangement can be more restrictive. If you are doing a JV with a builder, for example, you need to be aware that you may not have the flexibility to source external builders for quoting. It's most likely that the JV partner, being a builder, has the intention that he or she will be building the end product. It means that you may not be able to then take the project out to the open market to ensure that you are getting competitive build prices. Similarly, let's say you are doing a JV with a town planner. If you at some point don't feel that you are getting the right advice from your town planner JV partner, it can then be complicated to go and get advice from other town planners and then present that to your town planner JV partner. Certainly, doing JVs with professionals can be somewhat more restrictive, as opposed to doing a joint venture where you can source the professionals outside of the deal. The flip side to this is, if you are the professional, then of course it is okay for you to be the JV with other parties and offer your skills as part of the agreement. You do, however, need to be confident in your own skills. If you are a builder, you'll need to bring the best build price to the table, or if you are a town planner, but this deal is in an area that is not your expertise, then you need to disclose this to the JV so that external advice can be sought and you can oversee the process. JV with or between self-managed super funds. When doing joint ventures with or between self-managed super funds, it is vital that you seek specialist advice. Self-managed super funds can be very restrictive, so you need to seek professional advice before considering doing a JV with one of them. Taxation in JVs. Equal part JV. To better understand the taxation implications in joint ventures, you are best to seek specialist and professional accounting advice. Looking at it from a general perspective, however, if you are doing a JV where you have equal parties in the JV, whether it's a partnership of two trusts or one corporate discretionary trust who's distributing to two piggy bank trusts, the tax implications are very similar. Each party needs to look after their own tax implications, capital gains tax or income tax, on the money that they've received from the deal. Worker money partner deals. When it is a worker money partner deal, there will be a contract in place. From the money party's perspective, the trust owning the property will be entitled to the normal investment income tax and capital gains tax rulings. Provided that the ownership structure isn't in the business of real estate, then any gains made when the property is sold will be subject to this capital gains tax and also potentially the 50% exemption if it has been owned for more than 12 months. This gain will be calculated net of any payment that's been made to the working party. From the working party's perspective, the entity that the working party is operating under is not entitled to capital gains tax exemption. Thus, all of the money that is generated, regardless of whether it's a percentage of profit from the sale, will be treated as income for tax purposes. So in that situation, the money party who owns the property and has sold the property can actually be in a better tax situation than the working party because of the exemptions with capital gains tax. This is something that needs to be understood in advance and then agreed on, so that all parties understand how they are going to exit the deal. Common mistakes in JVs. The biggest mistake, hands down, with JVs is lack of communication. As soon as parties stop talking, stop communicating, and stop emailing, then that is the time to notice a red flag. It is essential that the communication channels remain open, and even though there might be difficult conversations to be had, the parties need to continue to talk to each other. As soon as that fails, then you've got major problems. Detailed below are some other common mistakes. Doing JVs for the shared excitement and doing with friends. When people do a JV together because they are really excited to be doing something together or because they want to do something with their friends, this can be a recipe for disaster. This type of JV can become very emotional and risky because there are hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake. Instead, JVs need to be entered into in a very business-like manner to ensure that decisions are being made based on the numbers while removing as much emotion as possible. Not considering worst-case scenarios. Problems arise when parties come together without considering the worst-case scenarios and not thinking the deal through to the full extent. All the questions detailed above need to be asked. This is where having an agreement in place that outlines these what-if scenarios in advance, with solutions documented, becomes very helpful. Too many decision makers. Having too many decision makers can also cause problems within the JV arrangement. Essentially, too many cooks in the kitchen bogs down the whole decision-making process. There are hundreds of decisions to be made throughout a deal, and if that process becomes difficult and time-consuming, then the whole deal can be jeopardised. Think of the example of selecting paint colours and selecting the real estate agent. If there are three parties in the JV and all three want to have input and make decisions on paint colour, it is going to be a really difficult JV to manage. Instead, you want to set out each person's role or roles and be very clear on what each person manages and then stick to this throughout the JV. This is why you want complementary roles. You don't necessarily want two project managers, both making decisions on paint colour, for example. Having that conversation and getting that cleared up from the very outset is very important. Insufficient profit in the deal after the percentage split between parties. Another common mistake is where the deal is too skinny and there really is insufficient profit by the time you split it between parties. If you are working on a 50-50 split deal, and there is only $30,000 profit in a renovation, that's only $15,000 for each party. For all of the effort involved, it may not be worth the process. Knowing that there is a split in profit, you generally need more profitable deals to make it justified in a JV arrangement. No written agreement in place. One of the biggest common mistakes is not having a written agreement in place, or the agreement not being signed, or the JV parties not having a copy of the agreement. The solution to this is simple. Ensure that you have a written agreement and that all the parties have signed and have a copy of it. Settling for a JV partner that doesn't really fit your needs. Sometimes people are so desperate to get into a JV that they settle for any JV partner, even though they don't really fit their needs. For example, choosing a JV partner that in fact doesn't really have enough money to do the deal, which means that you then have to tip in some extra funds that you weren't really intending on doing, or the JV party really doesn't have great serviceability. So now, instead of having one equity serviceability party, you have to find a second person for the serviceability, resulting in a three-way JV split as opposed to a two-way JV split. Clearly, the more people you've got in the JV, the more complicated the process is going to be, and the more negotiations and coordination that needs to happen. The solution here is not to settle for someone you are not 100% happy with. For example, if you are the working party and you have done your research and the numbers, and you know that you can find deals where the feasibility stacks up and it's going to make a decent profit margin, but it requires $300,000 equity up front, do not then settle for a JV party that has only got $100,000. If it is a $300,000 that you need, then be proactive and find the person that's got that amount. Otherwise, you are going to either have to go for another deal that may potentially be a lower quality deal than what you would have preferred to have gone for, or you are going to have to find additional parties to do the JV with, and this will further complicate it. Partner not market ready and you miss out on deals. It's important to check that your serviceability partner is market ready. Otherwise, you will end up missing out on deals because the parties don't have their structures in place or they haven't got their loan documents ready. Make sure all parties are ready to do the deal. Not all funds are made available at the start of the deal. Be sure to check that all the funds are available at the start of the deal. If this hasn't been taken care of from the start, there is a potential to run out of money. For example, the equity party might need $100,000 to do the deal, but they have only got $50,000 available at the beginning of the deal. Maybe they are relying on the sale of another property, or they are relying on something else to happen to supply the extra $50,000. Clearly, if something happens and that second $50,000 doesn't come to fruition and you're already halfway into the deal, then this is a major issue and the project is in a very compromised position. Instead, you really want to ensure that all of the funds required to complete the whole deal are put in place upfront and are set aside and quarantined for that particular deal so that parties can't use it for other purposes. That then gives everybody confidence that in fact the funds are available to complete the deal. Running out of money partway through the deal. Running out of money can be a big problem. For example, the deal ends up costing more than anticipated, or the bank valuation comes in lower than expected, and therefore you have to contribute more funds. This is something that needs to be considered in the what-if questions and answers. You've done the numbers on needing, say, $150,000 to do the deal, but what if, in fact, it ends up costing $200,000? Do any of the JV parties have another $50,000 sitting in a buffer somewhere that could be contributed in a worst-case scenario? Making those provisions up front and having those conversations at the start is very important. Lack of communication. The antidote to lack of communication is to specify the frequency of your communication and in what manner in your JV agreement. If you're the working party, then you need to ensure that every week you provide an email with an update on the project, if this is what has been agreed on in the initial setup. When you are reporting on progress, you should also be reporting on the positive and negative developments. For example, if there are delays happening or if there are issues with council, you need to flag them with your JV partners as they eventuate. You don't want to go to your JV party 3 months down the track and say, we have not ended up getting council approval because of XYZ. And in fact, that had been flagged by council for the last 3 months. But you just never chose to communicate that with your JV party. It's always better that your JV parties know what the holdups are from the start of the issue. This means making them aware of it the moment it eventuates, rather than 3 months down the track when the deal is actually going to finish 3 months later, and that's the first time the JV partner has heard anything about it. Certainly, having transparency and trust in your JV partners is essential, and that means open and trustworthy communication. Personality clash. Another common stumbling block is personality clashes. This is where there are mismatched personalities. For example, if you have a highly stressed JV partner paired with a really solution-focused person, then this can be a real issue. Similarly, a really detailed person with somebody who's very general can cause problems. Also, mismatches in your risk profile can be an issue. For example, where one party has a high risk tolerance and is a very aggressive investor, while the other party is a very low-risk conservative investor. This too can be a recipe for disaster. That is why having the initial interview meetings with your JV parties and really getting to understand each other's natures and history is very important. Project manager lacks attention to detail. You definitely need to keep an eye out for whether the project manager party lacks attention to detail. If you are the doing party and doing the project management, you need to have attention to detail. You are the one responsible for the detail and delivering on the deal, and the other parties, being the serviceability and equity parties, are relying on your capacity to deal with the details. If you don't have this attention to detail, then you will have to learn it. Yes, this can be a learnt skill if you have systems and procedures in place to remind you and prompt you at each stage, and that's where taking notes at each point can assist with this. Deal takes longer than expected. The deal taking longer than expected can certainly have an impact. If a certain amount of money has been set aside for the deal and it ends up taking another 6 months to complete and therefore costs more, that can be a major issue. You really need to be realistic and allow for buffers in your time frame. You also need to do good research on what the likely time frame is going to be for the type of deal and then add some extra time, and ensure that you have got the resources to deliver on that adjusted time frame. Deal changes midway. What happens when the deal changes midway? An example of this might be where council doesn't approve what you originally proposed. You could be proposing 4 units and council only approves 3. So you need to consider how you are going to deal with those types of changes and flag it up front with your JV partners. Have the conversation at the beginning, so you know how all the parties are going to handle that sort of situation. Even though you don't expect it to happen, you need to be on top of how to handle it if it did. Consider the opposite situation as well. For example, where council encourages you to go a higher density than what you had initially planned. Let's say you purchased a property and were planning to put in an approval for 5 dwellings, and then council made a change in the regulations that allow you to put in 10 dwellings. Whilst you would think that would be a great outcome, developing 10 is going to require more financing, will require more money up front, and will require more time. If that's not what you agreed on when you entered into the JV, then that sort of change can cause issues and friction between parties, where one party wants to do the 10, whereas the person with the money on the line may only want to do the 5 initially planned. So again, where there are changes, you need to try and preempt and accommodate them up front. Maintaining JV relationships. Once you have begun a JV, the next question is how do you maintain it so that you can do the next deal and the next deal and the next deal with the same JV party? There is one simple answer to this, and it's all about relationships. Joint ventures are about forming strong and reliable relationships, maintaining the relationships, having trust between all parties involved, and having respect between all parties. If you have got that, then you have got a perfect match, and you will be able to roll from deal to deal with the same JV group, assuming that everybody in the group is happy with the outcomes. This is an ideal situation, because not having to reinvent the wheel and go and find new JV partners will significantly speed up your capacity to do deals, and the group just moves on to the next deal together. Remember, No potential profit is worth the breakup of a family or a relationship.